From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dave Gallipoli, with commentary by political scientist Dr. Alan Shartok. Coming up this week, an Assembly Democrat has decided not to support Governor Cuomo in the November elections. We'll tell you why. We'll look back at the career of the late Senator James Donovan. And now that September's here, New Yorkers have all sorts of new taxes to pay. Those stories, Alan Shartok, and much, much more, coming up on this week's Legislative Gazette. As Election Day draws closer, experts are predicting a big win for Governor Cuomo. While Democrats across the state are happy about the predictions, one assemblyman has some harsh words for the governor. Lee Farbman reports.
In this election year, Republicans are taking shots at Governor Cuomo, trying to weaken his standings in the polls. That's nothing new. But now, criticism is coming from the Democratic side as well. Brooklyn Assemblyman Dov Hykin told the New York Post he's not going to campaign for Cuomo this fall, nor will he vote for him in November. Hykin is the first Democrat to make such a public split with the governor, although he thinks there are many Democrats who feel the same way. Hykin says his main concern is Cuomo's handling of crime.
Just over the weekend, some people visiting New York, people interested in the tennis matches that were taking place, a young man going to the defense of his mother, 22-year-old individual. His mother was being attacked on a subway train, went to her defense, and his life was ended. This is a daily occurrence here in the city of New York. I am frustrated. I know that people are frustrated. We are looking to the leadership of this state, both to the mayor here, Mayor Dinkins, and, of course, the governor of the state. And I look and I say, what's happening? Why isn't the leadership on top doing anything about the massacres that are taking place in our streets?
Hykin says if the governor did something about crime, it would make him look good if he ever decided to run for president. Hykin hopes the governor will react in a positive manner to his criticism. But what about the governor's reputation for political paybacks to those who criticize him?
I don't believe the governor is that kind of guy. He's a nice guy. I don't believe he attacks people for expressing their points of view, even though in this case, politically, people don't normally do that. I have no ulterior motive. I'm a Democrat. I'm proud of being a Democrat. But I'm very frustrated about what's happening in our streets every day, and there is an election for governor. The governor's running for his third term. He's finished 8 years. And I would hope, in fact, that he would look at the situation in the city and his advisors would look and say, what more can we do to make a difference?
Hykin says the governor gets an A for giving speeches, but when it comes to doing anything about city and state problems, the governor gets a D. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lee Farbman.
About 1,000 people came to pay their last respects to State Senator James Donovan, who died in late August of cancer. The funeral was held at St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery in Clayville, Oneida County. Governor Cuomo, several state senate and assembly members, and local government officials were among the people there. In the eulogy, the Reverend Monsignor Charles Sewell called Donovan a man for all seasons. He said Donovan built a lasting monument by showing love and concern for his people. Donovan died at the age of 66. He'd been battling cancer for the past 18 months. He leaves behind his wife Esther and seven children. The Republican served 12 terms for his district, which consisted of parts of Herkimer, Oneida, and Lewis counties in the upper Mohawk area. He ranked second in Senate seniority and served his region longer than any other senator in state history. Donovan was to have stepped down January 1st, which would have brought an end to his 12th full term in office. Republican Assemblyman Anthony Casale represents the same area as Donovan.
I worked with Jim Donovan for over 22 years, first as a staff person and for the 12 years that I've been in the Assembly, he and I have shared the same district. The name Jim Donovan will echo for many years in every corner of New York State. It would be virtually impossible to measure all of the benefits that he has brought to the people of his district and the people of this state, especially as chairman of the Senate Education Committee. But beyond that, it would be totally impossible to ever measure the number of lives he has touched in a very positive way. Senator Donovan always stood up for those principles in which he believed. In many cases, he was even ahead of his time on certain issues. He was a giant among men for sure, and he was a true statesman in that he would always rather lead than push people to his way of thinking. We're going to miss him very, very much.
Donovan championed conservative values throughout his tenure. His legacy is evident not only on the landscape in the form of new highways, colleges, and prison construction, but also in the public education system. As chairman of the powerful Senate Education Committee, Donovan's annual battle to bring more aid to school districts out of each state budget touched every student, teacher, administrator, and parent in the state. We asked the New York Post's Fred Dicker to look back at Donovan's career.
I first met Senator Donovan in 1978, a long time ago, when out of the blue he led a revolt within the Senate Republican ranks to take state monies out of the budget that were being used to pay for abortions. He was, of course, very strongly anti-abortion. And while some people didn't agree with him, that wasn't the issue. He was a very courageous guy who did some very dramatic things to pursue his own beliefs. His colleagues regularly described him as a gentleman and as a very fine, principled individual who fought for what he believed. I have no reason to doubt that. He always seemed to be that way. And most recently, under the torment of cancer, of course, he indicated he was having some second thoughts about his long-standing support for the death penalty, and he clearly agonized over that.
Do you think his conservative legacy will live on in the Herkimer, Utica area district?
Tough to tell. The Republican seat in the Utica area is up because Donovan chose not to seek re-election, and there are many people who think that the Democratic challenger there has a shot. So I think the area obviously remains conservative, but there's a pro-choice Democratic candidate who at least has an outside chance of winning. So I'm not sure what his legacy will be in terms of conservatism. Certainly Jim Donovan will be remembered, though, for many, many years to come as a very powerful, influential, and personally dedicated individual.
Governor Cuomo called Donovan's passing a tremendous loss to the state. He said the senator's struggle to overcome his illness served as a tremendous inspiration to all New Yorkers. Senate Majority Leader Ralph Marino said he was deeply saddened by the news. He said Donovan's 30 years of public service will long be remembered by those he served. Donovan is the third state senator to pass away this year, following Bronx Democrat Abraham Bernstein and Rockland and Orange County Republican Eugene Levy. The fallout of the Persian Gulf crisis continues to affect New York. Attorney General Robert Abrams has decided to subpoena the records of 10 home heating oil dealers to investigate charges of price gouging. Abrams says the price increases are taking place earlier than usual this year. He adds there are indications that some dealers may be taking advantage of the month-old Persian Gulf crisis to boost prices. During the week ending August 29th, the statewide average price for home heating oil jumped 10 cents to $1.17.7 a gallon. The State Energy Office says the average statewide price has gone up 22 cents a gallon since the August 2nd invasion and is 28 cents higher than at the same time last year. Jim Benton is executive director of New York's Oil Heat Institute. He says he doesn't know who's making the profits, the retailers or the wholesalers.
Most retailers right now, believe it or not, are well under their normal profit margin, trying to stay as competitive as possible in a market where prices vary by as much as, 10, 15 cents a gallon at wholesale. And I just can't visualize a situation in which a retailer can ignore his competition and enhance his profit margin.
Abrams' office will not give the names of the retailers subpoenaed, but Benton says he doesn't see any significant price gouging.
There may be an example here or there of an unscrupulous oil dealer, but the competition is such that it's highly unlikely, in my mind, that there's any profiteering going on.
Benton says the Attorney General's high political hopes are understandable, but he says we'll have to wait for the results of Abrams' political techniques.
These announcements, without naming the companies involved and the target companies, is an attention getter. It's sometimes called grandstanding, and it can't be evaluated until he tells us what the grounds are for suspicions and who the bad actors are.
If the Strategic Petroleum Reserve is placed in the market, Benton says oil prices could be stabilized. Jim Benton, executive director of New York's Oil Heat Institute. Cuomo, Rinfrey, Ween, London, Filani, there are so many people running for governor this year that it's hard to keep track of them at all times. Bruce Robertson got the final rundown of who's a candidate, who isn't, and who else may get votes without even running a campaign.
Now that the deadline for filing petitions has passed, we decided to contact Board of Elections spokesman Dave Flanagan to find out how many people are running for governor. Flanagan says 9 people have filed with the board.
Currently, we have the major party candidates, Mr. Lewis Ween for the Right to Life, Herbert London for the Conservative Party, Mario Cuomo for the Democratic Party, and Pierre Rinfrey for the Republican Party. And we also have had some independent filers who are running for governor. We have Mr. Joseph Mack filing with the United African Party. We have Mr. Craig Gannon filing with the Socialist Workers Party. We also have W. Gary Johnson filing with the Libertarian Party, and Lenora Filani filing for the New Alliance Party, and Jeetu Wiyusi filing for the Unity Party.
Governor Cuomo is also running on the Liberal Party line, that much we know. We also know that many predict that Governor Cuomo will win this race easily. In many local races, elections which are a foregone conclusion have a lot of frivolous write-in votes. Historical figures, movie stars, and even animated figures get their share of votes. We asked Flanagan if this sort of voting takes place in gubernatorial races as well.
For instance, I talked to the New York City Board of Elections, and in 1986, where Governor Cuomo did have a record win, they didn't have any write-in votes cast for governor. However, people do often write in for various offices, and some of the more popular candidates, after talking to a few different election commissioners that have shown up, are Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, Pat Paulson. But really, I think for the governor's race, fewer people write in for the governor's race than they would for some other local offices.
One city which saw a lot of frivolous voting was Buffalo during last year's mayoral election. Mayor James Griffin was a shoo-in to win another term in office, so votes were cast for people who had not expressed interest in running the city. Among the write-in candidates were the two quarterbacks for the Buffalo Bills football team, Jim Kelly and Frank Reich. Reich was performing better than Kelly at the time, so Reich defeated Kelly by a margin of 4-1. Election spokesman Flanagan wants to remind all New Yorkers that no matter who you intend to vote for, you have to be registered to vote. You need to register if you have never voted before, have not voted in 4 years, or if you have moved. Registration forms, which are available from your local Board of Elections, must be mailed by October 9th and received by the State Board of Elections by October 12th. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
September's here, and with the new month, a slew of new taxes in New York State. Brian Shields reports.
New Yorkers will find September more taxing than August, with new levies on containers, motor oil, and some telephone calls taking effect. State Tax Department spokesman Paul Ricard says there's a new 2-cent tax on soda cans and bottles, which may show up in the price of soft drinks. State budget officials say this new tax will raise some $24 million. The container tax, which applies to all cans and bottles requiring deposits except for beer and malt liquor containers, is paid by manufacturers. Another new tax will add 10 cents to each quart of motor oil sold in New York. It's expected to raise $10 million this year and add $1 or $2 to the cost of operating a motor vehicle. The tax will also apply to automotive transmission fluids. One tax concerning motor vehicles will drop for a while. This is Tax Department spokesman Paul Ricard.
Moreover, probably one of the taxes that most people would notice would be the tax that we have on gasoline, New York's gross receipts tax. And that is changed tomorrow to a flat pennies per gallon tax, and we estimate that it means a reduction in the tax on a gallon of gasoline ranging somewhere between 1.5 to 2 cents a gallon. So while some items become subject to taxes and even have new taxes, we feel that we also have something to offer in the line of a reduction on one particular product that many people use.
Once the prices are adjusted, the tax will bring in $224 million for the state. State and local taxes are also extended to informational and entertainment telephone calls. Ricard said the new tax will be applied to calls made to the 900, 800, 700, and 500 telephone exchanges. It will not apply to numbers used to order merchandise. This new tax is expected to raise $5 million for the state and $4.5 million for local governments. There are concerns that the new taxes will not bring in the budget department's projected revenues, but Ricard says taxation and finance's job is just to implement the taxes, not discuss revenue.
So our job is primarily to implement them, make sure that the people who are supposed to be collecting them are collecting them. And to that end, we've really devoted a great deal of time sending out literally hundreds of thousands of notices and explanations and the appropriate forms. And then in addition, we go out with the enforcement and compliance people to make sure that those people who are supposed to be collecting them are collecting them, and basically do everything we can to see to it that if there's a way that the revenues can come into the state and it can be distributed fairly and equitably, it's done.
And stores that sell cigarettes or tobacco products will have to pay a new $100 fee. Also, there will be a $25 fee on cigarette vending machines. These new fees are expected to raise $6 million. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brian Shields.
Last Tuesday's weather in New York City saw sunny skies and comfortable temperatures, so it seemed like a good day for conservative gubernatorial candidate Herb London to go shopping. But this was no ordinary shopping trip for London. He shopped at the family Red Apple Grocery in Brooklyn. Black demonstrators, including the self-professed anti-white activist Sonny Carson, have led a boycott of the Korean grocery store since the alleged assault of a Haitian woman some 7 months ago. We asked London why he decided to shop at the grocery.
And I went there because I'm appalled that these people cannot be in business, largely because the mayor refuses to enforce a court order which restricts the boycotters from coming within 50 feet of the store. Here are people who have come to this country looking for an opportunity, work hard, take care of their families, and have been prevented from remaining in business. If ever there was a clear violation of the Fifth Amendment to our Constitution, this is it. The life, liberty, and property of these people is being deprived without due process of law. I've called on the Attorney General to investigate this situation because I'm appalled by the stance taken by the mayor of New York and the governor of New York State.
London says he'd be doing much more to help the Koreans if he were governor.
But I would be urging the mayor of New York to enforce the law of the land. Second, I think it's very clear that the governor should speak out unequivocally in behalf of the Korean grocers in this matter. What people have to understand, it's not a question of a black Korean issue. It is a matter of boycotters working very hard to try and undermine the stores that have been opened by Korean grocers in Flatbush. The point about this is that many residents of that community are equally upset by the boycotters, and most of the members of this community are black residents.
Since its start, those participating in the boycott have chanted slogans like "Don't buy from Koreans" and "All Koreans out of our neighborhood." Flyers have also been distributed which say our people are being forced to shop with people who don't look like us. Joining us now is publisher of the Legislative Gazette newspaper, Alan Shartok. Alan, Brooklyn Assemblyman Dove Hyken is not supporting Governor Cuomo in the upcoming election. Do you think this is something that could hurt him in the future?
Hurt who? Governor Cuomo?
Okay, why don't you take it both ways?
It is certainly true that the old saying goes that how do you fool around with an 800-pound gorilla? And the answer is very, very carefully. If the gorilla is Mario Cuomo, and I was Assemblyman Dove Hyken, I don't think that I would go out of my way to alienate the guy. Apparently, Hyken is talking about how Cuomo hasn't been hard enough on crime, how things are tough, and I guess that Hyken may be looking for a scapegoat. I think that because, after all, he's the Assemblyman, too, and the crime's gotten worse while he's been there also. So I think that one of the things that has to be seen here is that the worm, to some degree, is turning on Cuomo. I mean, I think Cuomo is going to win this election and do phenomenally well. I mean, I think as a third-term governor, he's going to break every record on the books as a Democrat. He'll be, I believe, the first Democrat to win three terms as governor. However, when a person is in office for a long period of time and the essential problems of society remain, then there are two ways to go. You can either solve those problems or you can turn around and you can get a new guy who makes new promises and give him his years until he isn't able to make things change. And I think to some degree, the fact that Hyken feels compelled to make these charges against Cuomo now in his own party has got to say something not only about Hyken, but also about Cuomo's political fortunes.
Okay, on to the other candidates in the gubernatorial race. Herb London, the conservative candidate, visited a controversial Korean grocery store in New York City. What do you think was going on here?
I think it's clear that London, who's a man I have great respect for as a political conservative, wanted to make a statement, which is that America is the land of the free and that we don't allow certain groups to stand up and picket a Korean grocery store based on the color of people's skins and say, we don't want you people here. If the shoe were on the other foot and it happened to be black groups that were being discriminated against, you can be sure there would be hell to pay, as there should be. I'm not saying for a single second that there shouldn't. But when black groups are picketing Korean grocery stores and saying, we don't want to buy from them, and the hidden message is because they're Korean, a not-so-hidden message, and they're taking our jobs and doing this and that, that's a terrible thing. And I think Herb London is doing exactly the right thing.
Republican Pierre Rinfrae apparently wants county Republican committees to sign oaths of loyalty to his campaign. Are we seeing the panic button now?
Or? Yeah, I mean, this guy continues to defy all logic and to alienate his very closest supporters, the Republican Party, and now is saying, because there's so much desertion going on, both to Herb London and Lou Wien in the Right to Life Party, he is now saying, I will compel them. You know, David, the analogy is much the same as required courses in universities. There are good reasons for having required courses. One of them is that you can get people to take different courses that they might not otherwise. But the bad reason is because you take your worst professors sometime and you put them in required courses and you stick the kids in the required courses and you make them take those courses so that the professors will have somebody to teach, because if you give the kids freedom of action, they'll never touch those people. The same thing is happening here. Here's Rinfrae, who can't get people to go along by dint of his personality, and so what he tries to do now is to turn around and say, you must, because I'm a Republican and you're a Republican, you have to sign a blood oath to support me or the Republican candidate, or you're out. That just smacks of terror on his part.
Alan, a Republican leader this week passed away, Senator James Donovan. Your thoughts?
Well, I knew Jim Donovan, and I liked him very much. He was passionately dedicated to a couple of causes. One was, of course, abortion. He hated the concept of abortion and fought very hard against it and tried in every legislative session to make abortion an issue, both in Medicaid funding and the budget couldn't go forward. And I thought he was wrong in all of those cases and said so on the air. But what I really liked about the guy was that that despite our terrific differences, my differences which about him, which were both in print and on the radio and the television, Jim Donovan never had a cross word for me, was never mean to me, was always extremely gracious and nice. And when I had him on the television show or my radio shows, he would always be an easy person to talk to, good sense of humor, and I liked him very much. And when it came to the death penalty, which he and I did agree on, he, towards the end of his life, began to have major reconsiderations about his position on the death penalty. He had long conversations with the governor on the subject. And you can see that the guy was a thinking man, somebody that you could really relate to. I had a great deal of sympathy for him as he fought this cancer very bravely towards the end of his life. And frankly, I'm very disappointed and sorry to see him gone from the scene.
SUNY New Paltz professor and Legislative Gazette publisher, Dr. Alan Shartok. Joining us next to look at other events in state government this week is Paul Rosenthal with our legislative notebook.
The case against State Senate Minority Leader Manfred Arnstein went to New York's highest court on Wednesday. The Manhattan Democrat is charged with using public funds for political campaigns. The charges against Arnstein, Democratic State Senator Howard Babish, top Arnstein aide Frank Sanzillo, and Democratic senatorial candidate Joseph Montalto were lodged 3 years ago by Manhattan DA Robert Morgenthau. At issue before the Court of Appeals is how many of the 564 original counts lodged against Arnstein and the others should be allowed to stand. A lower-level appeals court threw out all but 119 of the original counts. Arnstein's lawyers are trying to get the remaining charges thrown out. Morgenthau wants the full indictment reinstated. Arnstein's defense has centered on the argument that while using publicly paid employees to work on political campaigns may appear unethical, it is not illegal. The Court of Appeals is expected to decide the case within 2 months. Republican gubernatorial candidate Pierre Rinfrae was out stumping in different cities throughout the state. The GOP candidate said if elected, he'll work for $1 a year until the state's out of fiscal trouble. Rinfrae also said he opposes a proposed $2 billion environmental bond act. Previously, Rinfrae had said he planned to vote for the bond issue. Asked about the switch in position, Rinfrae's campaign manager said the candidate had been ambivalent in the past about the bond issue. Democratic controller candidate Andrew Spano has embargoed a $2,000 campaign contribution from a Manhattan restaurateur with alleged ties to organized crime. That's according to Spano's campaign manager, who says the campaign did not know about the alleged organized crime connection until notified by Newsday. He says an embargo means the campaign will not spend the money and will determine whether to return it. Newsday reported that a similar contribution from Angelo Ponti was returned in 1986 by U.S. Senator Alphonse D'Amato. The Long Island newspaper also reported that Ponti, owner of Ponti's Steakhouse, has been identified in state and federal documents as having ties to organized crime's carting and demolition business. Attorney General Robert Abrams is going after two Florida-based fundraising companies. Abrams is suing the Sarasota-based companies WRG Enterprises and National Civic Assistance Group. Abrams says the companies used fraudulent fundraising tactics to solicit funds. He says the companies told potential donors that donated money was going to charity, but company officials pocketed some of the money. An Abrams spokeswoman says the state also has a temporary restraining order against the companies. That means the companies cannot touch the money they've already received in the state and are prohibited from further fundraising in New York while the case is pending. The state's insurance superintendent has some suggestions for what New York's businesses should do if they have employees in the reserves. Salvatore Curiali says if an employee's unit is called for active duty in the Middle East, the business should not cancel that person's insurance. Instead, Curiali says the business should temporarily freeze the coverage and premium payments until the employee returns. The superintendent says New York professionals called to military duty in the Mideast should not have to face financial hardship. He says the state wants these men and women to receive continued insurance protection for incidents that took place prior to active duty, and he says that coverage should resume as soon as the men and women return. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is produced by WAMC Albany, the program made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available by calling 518-473-6482. And by Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Gilletley. Most New York State Democrats are happy about the fact that Governor Cuomo may easily win a third term in office. But one Assembly Democrat is upset with the governor's performance. I'm Dave Gilletley. Coming up on this week's edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll hear from that Democrat. Join us each week for the Legislative Gazette.